So my research specifically, again, focuses on women with this authority to manage people, what we now often call leadership. And this area is surprisingly little research has been conducted in this area.
Hello, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health. You are listening to Into the Fold, the Hogg Foundation podcast. Hogg Foundation is a mental health grant-making foundation and part of the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more about the history of the foundation, as well as our numerous grant programs, visit www.hogg.utexas.edu. And don't forget that Hogg is spelled H-O-double-G. With us today is Dr. Tetyana Pudrowska, an assistant professor in the Department of Sociology at the University of Texas at Austin. She recently made headlines with a study that she authored, which concluded that women who have authority in workplace settings are at greater risk of depression compared to their male counterparts. She is here with us to discuss some of the implications of this research. Dr. Pudrowska, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Ike. It's a pleasure to be here.
So can you begin by giving us, I guess, a quick bio and overview of your professional background and how it is that you came to be interested in this particular subject?
My specialty, my broad research area is demography of aging and health. So everything I do is one way or another related to health. I got my PhD in sociology in 2008 from the University of Wisconsin. And then I came here in 2008. I came to UT as an assistant professor. And then I left for 3 years. I spent 3 years at Penn State, and now I'm back, and I'm very happy to be back. So I had, this short but already complicated professional biography. As for my research background, again, everything I do is related to health, and this study on job authority, gender, and depression is within my overarching research agenda that focuses on how people's major social statuses affect their mental and physical health over the life course.
Okay, and the particular study which grabbed my attention was published in the Journal of Health and Social Behavior, and it suggests that having more responsibility in the workplace contributes to depression among women, while it decreases the condition in men. Is that a pretty accurate summary?
It's a good summary. It's an accurate summary. You say this study caught your attention. Somehow this study caught a lot of media attention. And it's interesting that this study has two major findings, because I made two major comparisons. So one way that my co-author and I compared people, we compared women with authority to women without job authority. The other way we compared people was to compare women with job authority to men with job authority. I should have probably said that job authority was defined in our study as the authority to hire and fire people, the authority to influence their pay, and the authority to decide what and how people do at work. So these are basic management responsibilities. So what you actually included in your summary, and what was picked up by almost every media outlet that talked to us, was this difference between men and women. Yes, indeed, job authority seems to increase depression in women, but to decrease depression in men. And somehow the other part of the comparison, somehow it didn't elicit as much interest, but we also found that women with job authority, they actually had slightly elevated levels of depression compared to women who did not have these responsibilities to measure other people, to manage other people.
Okay, yeah, and that's also definitely another important element of the study. and one that maybe I'd like you to say a little bit more about. Quite a bit of research has been done on high-achieving women and, you know, the unique burdens or even double standards that they face. So what unexplored terrain are you hoping to capture with your work?
My research, some of my work, focuses on occupations as defined by U.S. Census. There is official classification of occupations, and some of my research focuses on management occupations specifically as defined by U.S. Census and what we call professional women. It includes women like physicians, nurses, accountants, lawyers, but according to the census classification, it does not include managers. So again, sometimes my studies focus on women in management occupations. This study in particular, the one that we're discussing right now, it included all women, regardless of their occupation, as long as they responded yes to these questions. They could be, for example, in nursing, which would be a professional occupation according to the census classification. But if she said, yes, I manage people, I define their pay, I define what they do, she was considered as having job authority in our study. So it was kind of my long way to say that there are a lot of studies when we talk about successful women. There are a lot of ways in which researchers define successful women or high status, right? Another word would be high status women that I also use in my research. So there are a lot of ways to define these women. A lot of studies focus on different aspects of women's achievement in society. For example, recently, probably this is one of the areas that you might be referring to was women in STEM, for example, women professional in STEM specialty and the double standard that they face and why they leave the STEM occupation, STEM fields in such high numbers. So my research specifically, again, focuses on women with this authority to manage people, what we now often call leadership. And this area is surprisingly little research has been conducted in this area. And why surprisingly? I'm sure you're familiar with the recent discourse. I call it the lean-in discourse. Women are encouraged to be proactive, to be ambitious, to strive for achievement, to strive for leadership. And one example, of course, would be Sheryl Sandberg, which tells women you should lean in and, you know, let's ban bossy campaign. So this is just one example of this broad idea that is very prominent in our society now, that women need, or society needs, or women themselves need to increase their representation in leadership positions. Okay, and there is a lot of research that has focused specifically on women's access to leadership positions and, you know, women's patterns of representation in leadership and what might prevent women from entering these positions in high numbers. One of the problems with the so-called lean-in discourse in general is that they say very little about what happens when women actually enter these positions of authority. So there is this implicit assumption that this is the end in itself, and this is what women should do. And once you do that, then it will be a professional success, right? It will be career success in itself. And I believe that it is important to understand women's experiences there in leadership positions, because I think it's important to increase women's retention there, not just women's access to leadership, but to make sure that once women get there, women stay there and thrive there. And one of the areas, so again, like I said, we know very little about women's experiences in leadership. One of the areas that has received some attention in research has been gender differences in salary and compensation between men and women managers. And there we have evidence, including federal evidence, evidence from federal data collection from national statistics, that even in the same types of management occupations, women managers indeed receive less pay than men managers with comparable qualifications. But we know very little beside these material aspects of inequality. We know very little about the psychosocial costs and rewards of leadership and whether they accrue to women to the same extent as to men.
I would think that for women like the ones in your study, that talking openly about mental health issues, you know, to whatever extent they're allowed to, can be a kind of double-edged sword because, you know, just admitting to emotional vulnerability can undermine the image of authority that, that many of them, I'm sure, would like to project and need to project. So is that, in a sense, part of the problem and the issue that you're looking into?
Thanks, Ike. It's a great question. So basically, one of the findings of this project about job authority and mental health is that the mechanism linking job authority to depression among women is psychosocial stress in the workplace to which women are exposed with greater frequency and intensity than men. And one of the sources of this stress is the so-called double bind or double standard. And you exactly pinpointed this double bind faced by women in leadership positions in your question. So on the other hand, women in leadership positions, they are held to the feminine standards we all have in our culture. We have these ideas. Widely shared ideas of what it means to be a woman and which traits, which characteristics are consistent with femininity. And so on the one hand, women in authority positions, they're expected to be nurturing, caring, emotional, warm, are consistent with the cultural norms of femininity. On the other hand, women in leadership positions are expected to be active, competent, stoic, competitive, authoritative compared with the ideals of the leadership role. So this is where the double bind stems from. So basically, if you act in a feminine way, if you show like a soft side, if you become emotional, if you, for example, talk about your mental health problems, and we know very well that in our culture, depression is very often framed as a woman's problem, and not surprisingly, almost all of antidepressant commercials are directed at women. So if you act consistent with the cultural norms of femininity, then you are not considered a good leader, right? Because that's not what good leaders do. But at the same time, if you act consistent with the norms of leadership, then you are judged negatively for being unfeminine. So basically, it's damned if you do and damned if you don't.
So what are, and thank you for that, what are some limitations of this study and what more work needs to be done in order to, you know, to support what you seem to be on to?
There is one of the limitations. I wouldn't call it a limitation, but this is something that we definitely need to follow and to obtain more knowledge. Like I say, we have this pattern. So we documented these relationships that indeed it seems that, and our study, it was conducted longitudinally over time. So for example, we could look at women and men in positions of job authority, and we can follow follow them over time to see how their depression changes, and this is where our conclusions come from. What's important now is to understand specifically which mechanisms can explain these relationships that we find. And this is very important, of course, in terms of, you know, implications for research, but this is also very important in terms of suggesting what needs to be done. Because a lot of people who talk to me about this study, there is always a question, okay, what can women do? Right. Okay. So this is, let's say, this is culture. Of course, we need a cultural shift, but it takes a long time. And if I'm a woman in a leadership position now, and I have to deal with the stress now, what I can do now? So one of, this is why this question is so pressing, because really what we need to think about is practical solutions. So not just, we're kind of thinking on multiple levels. On the one hand, we're thinking in terms of, you know, like social implications of our findings, policy implications at the broader level of society. Then we're thinking at potential workplace interventions, for example, that HR people, the strategies that that HR people or executives can employ to alleviate the stressful situations for women in leadership. And then there is the third level, the individual level, that, you know, what women can do themselves to be, it's not that women need to become more efficient or more, you know, to increase their capacity for leadership, because there is a lot of research that women are very efficient leaders, that women are, you know, perfectly capable of successful leadership. It's not what women need to work on, you know, other than like both. Of course, everyone should work on their professional development. But, you know, women should be able to understand the sources of the stress. If there is the stress that is related to their job authority, how can we help women to pinpoint the sources of the stress and do something about the stress so that, you know, so that they can enjoy the benefits of job authority without kind of having to expend energy and, you know, time in dealing with the stressful aspects?
Is there any sense from your work that, you know, that the problem is more acute in specific fields or types of occupations?
This is another excellent question, Ike. Again, related to the study that we are discussing, this study was done among people who were born in 1939, and the first time the questions about leadership and mental health were assessed were collected in 1993 when they were in their mid-50s, and the second time these questions were asked 10 years later when they were in their mid-60s. These women in our study, they entered the workforce and they were among the first cohorts to actually increase their presence in leadership positions. But they are different from current generations of women, because women, older women like women in our study, if they occupied leadership positions, they were mostly concentrated in the traditionally female occupations, for example, education and health services occupations. It's different now for younger cohorts of women, because now women expand their presence in traditionally male-dominated occupations, and clearly now more women assume leadership responsibilities in finance, for example, or engineering or manufacturing industries, where previously these women, they were simply not represented. And these are occupations that we believe they may be, the stressors of leadership may be especially acute for women in these occupations. One of the reasons is that women are still a numerical minority there, because there is still, despite the progress that we've made, there is still, women are still underrepresented in this, for example, STEM occupations. I mentioned that even if we look at managers in the United States, the representation of women is very, very unequal across management occupations. So just a couple of numbers. On average, again, according to the U.S. Census classification of occupations, the management occupations, now the position of women, the share, the proportion of women across all management occupations in the United States, it's over 40%, which is encouraging. Right, so it looks like women almost achieved parity in terms of their access to management positions. But if we look at specific types of management occupations, we still see a lot of these differences that still reflect these traditional norms of masculinity and femininity and what is considered an appropriate, you know, like feminine job. For example, women in medicine, education, and social work or social services, about 60-70% of managers are women, as opposed to engineering and architecture, where about under 15% of managers are women. And among executives, high-level executives, for example, 26% are women. You know, so we can still see, even, you know, even you're a manager, right? This is the same management occupation. We can still see this unequal distribution of women and women in this, again, in fields where women have been traditionally underrepresented. One reason, you're a numerical minority. You know, you have less dense support networks. You have less opportunities for mentorship. This would be one reason. Another reason would be, again, having to do with the social norms, cultural norms of being a woman in a field that's not conventionally feminine. So maybe you're in the wrong place. You know, maybe you're not as good in this, for example, you know, in this engineering field as men would be. So there are still a lot of, you know, a lot of prejudice against women's leadership, and especially this prejudice, you're absolutely right, is especially acute in some fields, specifically in these, you know, traditional fields which are historically and culturally associated with masculinity, but not femininity.
Can't help pointing out that you're professionally accomplished, whether you're in the habit of calling yourself a leader or not. Do you have any personal experience with this issue, or is there anything about your own experience that maybe you see a little bit more clearly just as a result of having done this work, and disclose as little as you like?
Thank you. Yeah, I did okay. For myself, this study was actually not prompted by my own experience, because again, this study is of people, of women and men who have the responsibility to control others' work. Fortunately, maybe unfortunately, I don't have this responsibility, and I will try to keep it this way for as long as I can. It's just not my personality. So no, it wasn't my personal experience. Of course, you know, I come from a country which has a lot of problems with, gender discrimination. And of course, you know, I experienced, you know, these instances of, you know, hostility and discrimination as a woman, as an ambitious, as a successful woman in my country, and sometimes here in the United States. But what prompted this study was my background, was my interest in health, in social aspects of health. Because in social epidemiology and in medical sociology, one of the most widely accepted and well-documented findings is that people of higher social status, for example, people with higher levels of education, more money, higher levels of occupational prestige, more prestigious jobs, these are people who have better physical and mental health. It's like you take medical sociology 101 and people will tell you that it's good to be rich and well-educated because you will live longer and you will have better health. And I noticed this, it's not the only paradox, as I call it. But this, you know, what I noticed in my data is first I noticed it with respect to women's higher status and breast cancer, that it's actually women in higher status positions. They had higher risk of breast cancer than women in lower status positions. Also, women in higher status positions, they were advantaged in almost all other health outcomes. And so at first, this paradox, I wanted to know what's going on there, what can explain this paradox. And actually, I published a couple of papers which are related to job authority before, but they focus not on depression but on breast cancer. Like I said, it's a much larger project. So basically what I'm interested here is what's going on. We cannot apply, this is the theories, this is the situation where we can't apply these traditional theories, traditional sociological theories of social advantage. This is an interesting case when social advantage may act as a stressor. Right, because under which social conditions, your advantage status, for example, having authority, being a leader, having this responsibility, under which conditions this desirable social status and this desirable workplace resource can actually become a stressor that may affect your health negatively. And this is kind of was my research questions, and this is I just found how job authority in the context of our society, there are just some social groups, and not just women, but for example groups with lower social status like women or racial and ethnic minorities, and especially women of color who have this double whammy of being a woman and a racial minorities. These are social groups whose leadership, whose authority is not considered legitimate by our cultural standards. And so these are members of social groups. If they attain positions of authority in our society, they are often resisted and penalized for not being in the position, in the expected positions as opposed, for example, to men. Men's authority is legitimate and normative and expected in our society. So this, my argument is that actually, like, social advantage, social status, the health benefits of social status can be undermined if social status interacts with other statuses that are considered disadvantaged.
Dr. Tatiana Pudrowska, thank you so much for finding the time to talk to me about your research, and thanks so much for the wisdom that you've been kind enough to drop for us.
Thank you so much, Ike. Thank you for having me. And these were really excellent questions and thought-provoking questions. And it was a pleasure for me to talk to you about that. Thank you.
Exciting news from the Halk Foundation. The second edition of our comprehensive guide to the Texas mental health system is now available for download. It is called A Guide to Understanding Mental Health Services and Systems in Texas, and it is a 358-page monster of a reference tool for people who wish to better understand the vast array of agencies and services and programs that make up our state's bewildering mental health system. If you go to our website, www.hog.utexas.edu, you can download it in either PDF or EPUB format. We also have a limited number of printed copies. To request one, email us at hog.com at austin.utexas.edu. And that's it for this episode of Into the Fold. Please like us on Facebook, check us out on Twitter, at Hog Foundation. Thanks for joining us.